In any career, it's true that women haven't always had the same opportunities as men. Much the same is true in radio. This project is my honors thesis, which aims to shed light on some of the unique women, particularly in the United States, who overcame sexism and a lack of access in their field. From the first female DJs to women still blazing a trail through the industry, I'm Maggie Berner, and this is Feminist Frequencies. There's some debate over the true firsts of women in broadcast, but there's one woman and her station that stand out as pioneers. This woman would become known as Sybil Harold True, so you could say that she really was one of the true founders of radio as we know it, although that wouldn't be her married name for a number of years. The reason this particular station stood out was because it was new and experimental. This experimental station was founded by a man named Charles Harold. Charles Harold attended Stanford University and after that went on to found his radio and engineering college. While Harold didn't have a doctorate, his students still called him Doc, giving him the honorary title of Doc Harold. When he would broadcast, that's how he would introduce himself. In an interview with Gordon Grebb, when he asked Sybil True about why he was called Doc, she explained that while they wouldn't have used the word radio, that's how he would introduce himself during a broadcast, while the rest of the broadcasters would introduce themselves with their own names. Harold wasn't the first to broadcast sound, but he was the first to broadcast regularly, almost a decade before radio was officially a thing. Their broadcast transmitted from San Jose, California, and reached San Francisco, where another experimental station would communicate with the broadcasters of KQW. His wife was not only a broadcaster, but the result of all of his broadcasters having their programs at scheduled times would make it what it was, the first ever radio station according to the qualifications laid out by RadioWorld.com, even if it was never officially recognized since they didn't get their call letters, KQW, until 1921, 6 months after KDKA, who were first after the station went back on the air post-World War I, according to the story of KQW Radio. According to Sybil Harold in her interview with Gordon Grebb, Doc Harold was dedicated to working on the station, holding several patents on the equipment used on top of his other interests, for example, astronomy. He sold the station in 1925, although he stayed on as an engineer, and passed away in 1948 after not having worked with the station for a number of years. Charles Harold was her first husband, them having met in the early 1910s. They got married in 1913, and Sybil worked alongside him at the station as it developed into something closer to what radio would become in the future. They had their first child in 1914, but family life didn't stop the Harolds. While Sybil herself wouldn't have had any formal training in radio, she helped her husband develop his methods and started broadcasting to help him. She also had previous experience with Morse code that gave her the basis for the technology and systems they used to broadcast. We'll get more into her specific radio show in a bit and how she also would bring her son on the air with her. But more on that later. So before we get into why Sybil Harold was so important, we have to talk about why this particular station was so important. I touched a little bit on it when we were talking about Charles Harold, but here's the thing. This was the early 1900s. The only thing really being broadcast over the airwaves regularly at that point would have been Morse code. Marconi would have broadcast music, but Charles Harold strove to expand upon that, broadcasting voices and radio, which he started doing with this experimental station in 1909. He and his broadcasters would then start to play music, but it wasn't until 1913 or 1914 when Sybil was there, when she was working with the school and teaching the boys Morse code, that the regular radio show would actually start to develop. There are some sources, including sanjoserocks.org, that actually credit Sybil True as the first true radio disc jockey or radio DJ. This is because she pioneered what a radio show really was back in those days, and honestly created the blueprint for what we still consider a radio show today. Of course, this all started with her Morse code background. Again, like I said, with teaching the boys that Morse code and then eventually developing her radio show as a part of that. Sybil would not have been able to develop such a show without having met Doc Harold through one of her neighbors, subsequently getting her interested in the field and providing her expertise to then help him develop his station further. It's interesting that she was credited as the first true disc jockey, though, because there were other broadcasters that were working with Doc Harold at the time as a part of KQW, but it was the regularity of her show that gives her this credit. She would broadcast on Wednesday nights. She would broadcast her show on Wednesday nights, and we'll talk a little bit more about that show later, but because of the scheduled regularity of such a show, that is what made it what it was. I also mentioned that she had an interest in teaching at Doc Harold's school, teaching the Morse code. This wasn't just because she was interested, but she also wanted to get the boys interested in coding and thus broadcasting so that they would go on to also broadcast and be on the airwaves along with all of the other existing broadcasters that Doc Harold had. In this way, it could be said that her own interest inspired the interest of many others. It's also important to emphasize that KQW was not a radio station in the way that we currently think of a radio station. There wouldn't have been the same studios, the same transmitters, the same microphones, computers, any of that, because keep in mind, this is very early technology. What this would have been was something more like a telephone handset. And obviously not the smartphones that we have today. It would have been a little bit larger, a little bit clunkier, and definitely not to the grade that we see equipment as today. But that was where we got our start. It also meant that a lot of people weren't necessarily the most receptive to those broadcasts in that time. But as technology started to improve and radio started to be taken more seriously, that is when stations like KQW really started to take off. It's important to recognize the limits of the technology at the time and exactly how new it was, just so that I can adequately explain why Sybil's show was so revolutionary and how it's impressive that, in some ways, many radio programs are similar even to this day, over 100 years later. See, the show that I was alluding to earlier, the one on Wednesday nights, was called The Little Hams Program. This is somewhat of a play on ham radio, but then also the little in the title referred to the age of her audience. See, her audience was younger, children for the most part, who would tune into her programs, listen to her play music, and then would even write her letters that she would go on to read on her program. These letters would also request for her to play certain songs. See, not only would Sybil be on the air broadcasting the time and announcing the songs that she was playing, but part of that was also that she was broadcasting music. The way that she would do this was she would borrow records from local record stores that she would then play over the air, announce the song, the artist, the album, and then those would go back to the music stores for people to purchase later. This was a mutually beneficial relationship in that way, since she was able to have those records to be able to play on air, but also the record stores would then get business from her listeners who would come and buy those records from them later on after her show had aired. This also made way for a relationship between those music stores and KQW in more ways than one. For example, as her show gained popularity, Sybil was able to do weekly radio contests. Again, a concept we still see today. She would have little prizes that people would enter to win, and then they could win that just by listening to her radio show and the process that she had. The other way that this relationship was mutually beneficial was in the way that it connected with the larger radio and engineering college of Doc Harold's. Basically, they were able to partner together to create something called a listening room. This listening room was a way to promote public interest. See, a lot of the interest at the time was garnered from people who already had experience with radio, who were interested in the developing technology that Harold was producing at KQW, although it wasn't quite KQW yet. It was a professional interest, seeing if the radio station would work. But by promoting public interest in the station, with playing the records and being able to hear the direct impact of the station, more people were listening to this station that would then become interested in what they were doing at Doc Harold's experimental station. Again, Sybil would also have been promoting the professional interest of the students as well, in that she was also a large part of the experimenting with this experimental station and how it would give way for full-on radio stations in the future. This information and more is available on sanjoserocks.org and in a piece written by World History Radio that talks about some more women in radio as well, some of whom we will talk about in future episodes of this podcast. But it really is worth recognizing that Sybil Harold, despite being an underrated voice in the industry, arguably made way for radio as we know it today. Again, unfortunately, the station did go off the air due to World War I and was unable to obtain its call letters until 1921, when Sybil was less involved with the station and then would later go on to divorce Charles Harold. But regardless, she definitely had an impact and continued to defend the impact, not necessarily even of herself, but of the station as a whole, later on in her life as well. Although Sybil didn't continue to work with the station, one thing that she did do was promote the station and talk about its impact later on in her life, even after her ex-husband's death in 1948. In fact, there was one interview that she gave with Gordon Greb in January of 1959, where she talked about her involvement as well as the involvement of her husband and of the other broadcasters at the station at the time, supporting that KQW was one, if not the first, actual radio station despite not having its call letters. Her willingness to talk about the station and her enthusiasm for it prevented the station from being completely lost to history. Due to the lack of official recognition of the station, it would be easy for the station to be lost. The Harold's contributions, both hers and Doc Harold's, made way for the technology and the structure of what radio would eventually become, making her an incredibly valuable contribution to the history of radio, even if she was humble about her own accomplishments within the industry. She would, however, go on to be inducted into the Bay Area Radio Hall of Fame in 2011, along with Gordon Greb, who conducted that interview with her in 1959. Unfortunately, beyond these records, there isn't a whole lot of information on Sybil Harold True. This is partially due to the time period in which her life took place. Because this was the early 1900s, a majority of the records to her life, not just in radio, but in general, were connected to that of her family. So her first husband, Charles Harold, her second husband, Henry True, as well as her son. Due to this unfortunate circumstance, there isn't a whole lot of mention of her outside of her career with KQW or outside of the interview with Gordon Greb, which means I was unfortunately unable to find a birth date for her or an obituary to confirm when she had passed away. So, just to recap. In 1909, in San Jose, California, there was an experimental station pioneered by a man named Charles Harold. He would then go on to marry his wife, Sybil, in 1913, making her Sybil Harold. Both of the Harolds would become pioneers in the radio industry due to their contributions to the industry, but highlighting Sybil in particular as not only the first female DJ to be on the air, but also as some sources argue, possibly the first DJ of all time, despite other broadcasters being a part of KQW before she made her debut on the air. This is likely due to the regularity of her programming and the content of her programming as well, being the Little Hams program. This would then play music over the air and connect with local music stores, providing a connection to the community that would then go on to benefit her husband's school and radio station. Although the station was not the first to receive its call letters, arguments have still been made that due to the content, regularity, and time period that the radio station was active prior to World War I, it was likely the first radio station in the United States. KQW did get its call letters in 1921, a little over 10 years after the station officially went on the air. And although Sybil did not continue to work with the station later on in her life, she would still continue to talk about it, promoting her husband's name and the accomplishments that the both of them contributed to over the course of their time with KQW. This has been Sybil Harold True on Feminist Frequencies. Next week on Feminist Frequencies, we're headed over to the East Coast to meet Eunice Randall, another one of the firsts of women in broadcast. You'll notice some similarities to Sybil Harold True with her Morse code background and her early radio show as well. But she also had some more technical skill under her belt. This has been Maggie Berner with Feminist Frequencies, signing off.